This is Sportscaster.com's Open Mic with Johnny Kane on 760 WJR, featuring sports commentary and stories brought to you by the most compelling rising stars in sports broadcasting. Here's your host, Johnny Kane.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to the show. It is Wednesday, May the 7th. I'm Johnny Kane with Sportscaster.com, and this is Open Mic. Now, this program is led by student broadcasters navigating their way in sports broadcasting. We highlight some of the big stories happening all around the great state of Michigan. And tonight, a really good show for you. Our guests include Matt Helbig, founder of Big River Race Management. The I Ran the D 5K returns to Detroit later this month, one of the premier road races in our city. All four major professional sports teams are involved. We'll discuss what goes into putting on a race of this size and how Detroit benefits as a whole by having it. We'll also talk to Brooke Fletcher, a rising sideline reporter who you've likely seen covering Michigan and Michigan State football on Big Ten Network. She's in her first season covering the Chicago White Sox with the Chicago Sports Network. And Brooke got her start working in TV right here covering the Tigers and Pistons on Bally Sports. Really good perspective about working in Major League Baseball as the daughter of former big leaguer and Detroit Tiger middle infielder Scott Fletcher. Justin Kelly, a strength and conditioning coach at Wayne State University, joins the show to talk about everything that goes into getting the most out of collegiate athletes. As you probably figure, the role of a strength coach has evolved over the years as technology and new equipment has evolved as well, how that role differs from sport to sport. And we'll also hear from an athletic director from one of our local universities, Oakland University AD Steve Waterfield, on all that goes into holding one of the most high-profile positions on a college campus. Fascinating look at college athletics as a whole and how the AD role is defined. It's a really good show, and I'm not just saying that. Let's get it started with the more mobile audience. And if you're a runner, you'll dig this. If you've ever thought of participating in a 5K race, which is 3.1 miles, you can do it. The I Ran the D 5K returns to downtown Detroit on Saturday, May 17th. The race starts at the Big Tiger just outside of Comerica Park. Then you run around Ford Field. Then you end up on the field inside Comerica Park. Really an incredible race. Cody Stedman is a student at Saline High School. He hopes to one day work in sports broadcasting. And he spoke with Big River Race Management founder Matt Helbig about all things that go into making I Ran the D a success here in Detroit.
We're joined by CEO of Big River Race Management, Matt Helbig. Matt, thanks so much for joining us today.
Yeah, Cody, no problem. Thanks for having me.
So to start off, how about you introduce what your company really does?
Sure. I'm a St. Louis native, and my company, Big River Race Management, helps organize and execute 5K and 5K events, basically endurance events. So 5K, 10K, half marathon, full marathons, road races, essentially, from coast to coast. So we do events primarily in the Midwest, and we do some events on the East Coast for the most part.
That's great to hear. So how did you get into the world of race management?
I actually got into the industry by opening some running stores in St. Louis to begin with. And pretty much right after we opened the running stores, we started getting phone calls from local 5Ks, 10Ks, cross-country race organizers asking if we could help with managing their events. You know, could we sponsor the event? Could we provide the timing for those events and the organization? And as at that time, you know, we kind of looked at the race management side of things as a way to drive foot traffic and business into our retail stores. So we started kind of a side hustle doing small 5Ks and working with some of the local high schools for their cross country meets. And, you know, we'd host the packet pickups at our stores where, you know, people would come in before the events and pick up their race bibs or their t-shirts. And then, you know, they'd spend a few bucks at the store. So it was always kind of a side hustle for quite a few years. And then as we kind of got better at it and invested in some different new technologies at the time, I sold the retail stores and started focusing 100% on the event management and race management side of things. And so, yeah, here we are now. We've got three offices around the country. We produce and manage about 450 events a year. And it's just a ton of fun to be still be in the sport, doing something that I love to do.
Now, what's one part of a race day that most people don't realize takes a ton of work behind the scenes?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think there's a lot of different aspects that go into producing a large road race. You know, I Ran the D, for instance, is one of our signature events coming up here in Detroit. The permitting is quite a grueling process, getting through all the different departments in the city. That's one of the first challenges that you run into. And then I'd say that probably the biggest thing that people don't necessarily realize is the amount of work and effort that goes into closing down 3.1 miles of city streets. The coordination with the Detroit Police Department, we hire a third-party barricade company to come out. They drop barricades and cones along the course to ensure that motorists can't enter the course, making sure that we have all the intersections listed with the correct number of volunteers and police and safety personnel. So that's another big lift of the event. And that's actually probably the most expensive part of putting on an event. You know, a lot of folks probably think that like the medal and the t-shirt that you get when you sign up is the most expensive aspect of putting on a road race, but it's actually the safety and security is far and away the biggest expense. So, you know, when you're paying $30, $40, $50 for that race entry, a good chunk of that is going towards making sure that the race is safe. And as somebody who participates in road races, they probably don't think about that aspect of the event like they do some of the other aspects that are more visible. And then, of course, you know, ordering 6,000 t-shirts in the right sizes and having the right amount of medals and not having too many left over, but just enough at the finish line to make sure everybody gets one. But, you know, depending on how, you know, your marketing and your advertising and your promotions are going, sometimes maybe you have a big jump at the end, but it's always a challenge.
So in other words, the organization keeps you busy.
Yeah, you know, it's one day. It's even just 3 or 4 hours of when we all kind of come together, but yeah, I mean, it's months and months of planning and tons of hours. I mean, we're going to put in hundreds, if not thousands of hours of manpower and phone calls and emails and follow-ups and vendor connections and all those things. So there's a heck of a lot that goes into it, more than most people would probably expect.
Now, let's talk a little bit more on the local side for us here in Detroit.
Yeah, I mean, the I Ran the D event is one of the most fun events that we put on our calendar. And it's one of the highlights on the Detroit racing calendar. It's really one of the only events throughout the entire year that has all four pro sports teams come together. So you got the Tigers, the Pistons, the Lions, and the Red Wings all collaborating together to bring the health and fitness community together, the sports community together. You know, the fan bases from all four of those teams come together to celebrate this event. And it's just so much fun to watch everybody come out and bring the enthusiasm and the energy and, you know, running 3.1 miles on the streets of Detroit on a spring morning. There's nothing like it.
How would you think other communities besides Detroit would be affected by the races that you organize?
Yeah, I mean, each race has its own way of connecting with its community. In Detroit here, the I Ran the D 5K benefits local nonprofits. So last year, Chad Tuff, which is an organization that raises funds for child brain tumor cancer research, you know, they've been one of our main beneficiaries the last few years. Last year, we raised over $70,000 for that organization. And this year, Chad Tuff is going to be one of our charity partners. We've also partnered with the Detroit Sports Commission, who do some amazing things for youth sports here in the community. And we're excited to have them be a part of the event this year as well. So that's how this particular event touches the community here in Detroit. Other events that we work with around the country have different charitable aspects and do different things for their communities. But that's one of the beautiful things about, you know, endurance sports and road races like this is the bulk of these events that you're going to see that come through the community on almost a weekly basis now in almost every community around the country are going to have some charitable component to it. That's just doing great things in the community. So runners and walkers are very generous people. And these events are a great way to not only give back to your community, but gives you some fitness goals and a reason to get out and stay healthy and active and getting outside.
Yeah, I completely agree. And so if you're just tuning in, we're talking with Matt Helbig, CEO of Big River Race Management, one of the managers for the I Ran the D race. Now, I know you mentioned the Detroit Sports Commission, who has played a pivotal role enhancing the local economy of Metro Detroit. Do you partner with local organizations, charities, or schools that make the event more meaningful or give back? I know that you mentioned Chad Tuff, but what other organizations help you and other races that you hold across the country?
Sure. I mean, some examples that kind of come to mind, the Girls on the Run organization, that is a national organization that helps girls between the ages of 8 and 13 learn life lessons and train for a 5K. We work with a number of those chapters throughout the Midwest and help them execute their 5Ks, which is their culminating experience after a 10-week training session where they meet twice a week, where they run, and then they learn some different life lessons that helped them grow up to be strong, amazing women. That's one example. We work with nonprofit organizations like zoos, art museums, lots and lots of different types of nonprofits and charities put on 5Ks as fundraisers, be it the primary fundraiser or just a way to raise some funds for specific projects that they're working on. So, you know, there's also not-for-profits in a lot of markets that put on 5Ks and put on endurance events that's their primary function. And then they give back to the community in a number of different ways by supporting youth running organizations, youth sports initiatives, and a whole plethora of other charitable components.
The I Ran the D5K is coming up on Saturday, May the 17th. More than $200,000 have been raised for the Chad Tuff Foundation, which raises money for children with brain tumors. It is a worthy cause. For more information, go to runsignup.com and search I Ran the D. Let's talk baseball. Detroit Tigers off to an incredible start to the season, and right now it looks like it could be a three-horse race, although we're only a quarter of the way into the season. But with Detroit, Cleveland, Kansas City playing well, Minnesota and Chicago maybe haven't gotten off to the type of starts that they want to at this point, but we're only a quarter of the way into it, and obviously a lot of things can happen. Joining us now on Open Mic is Lyric Sloan from Michigan State University. She's part of the sportscaster.com program. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you. Always great to be back.
Yeah, it's good to have you on, and it's good that you got a chance to talk with somebody who is a great personal friend of mine and somebody who I've watched develop in the game. Brooke Fletcher started here with the Tigers a couple years ago working for Bally Sports, and now she's in her first season as the sideline reporter with the White Sox on the Chicago Sports Network.
Well, she has such a cool story. Obviously, she has some history with that team, and it's not like every average sideline reporter to be able to say that your dad played there for many years beforehand. And I thought it was so interesting because she brought a different aspect, saying that in a different way, you know, it prepared her to be able to be on the move like that and constantly moving around because she grew up with her dad doing the exact same thing. So she was ready for that, as well as just her progression to that position. Ultimately, she was in New York and she was working behind the scenes as an associative director, and that gave her a whole different insight to the field of broadcasting in general. And she said that it was so much sweeter working all those years behind the scenes and understanding the production as a team.
Yeah, her dad, Scott, as you mentioned, Scott Fletcher, he had a great big league career, spent more than 10 years in the big, started with the White Sox and ended his playing career in 95 with the Tigers, playing middle infield. Her brother was in the White Sox organization for a stretch. And I thought that was the one interesting thing when you were talking about everybody pays their dues in the industry, but if you just have your eyes set on, like, I just want to be a sideline reporter, but you never learn what happens in the truck, you have this skewed view of what goes into making a broadcast. But Fletch, she gets it.
Yeah, exactly. And she told me that when she was working behind the scenes with the directors and the producers, with those sideline reporters that were on air, she could hear exactly what they didn't like. So she could really apply that when she got on camera to everything that she could hear behind the scenes.
All right, here's Lyric Sloan with Chicago White Sox sideline reporter Brooke Fletcher.
I was doing so much research on you. You have such a crazy story. So your dad played for the White Sox, right?
Yes, he did. That was one of the teams he played for.
Yes. And I mean, this must be such a full circle moment for you. Now you're the sideline reporter for the White Sox, and you just had your first game reporting for them probably like a month ago, right?
Yeah.
How was it?
It was awesome. And like you said, it's a full circle moment. It felt pretty surreal. And, you know, baseball has always been such a huge part of my life with my dad and my siblings playing, and being at the ballpark just kind of felt at home, especially with the White Sox. And just showing up to spring training was kind of when it hit me, I feel like, because I heard so many stories from people that are still with the organization that were there when my dad played. And they were telling me all these different things about my dad as a player. I was like, wow, this is really special. And I'm just really honored that I've had this opportunity.
Yeah, that's so cool. I mean, what is it like having a dad that's moving around? Because baseball is a very every other day, you're going place to place. I mean, he must have been not around, or were you moving with him? What was that like?
Yeah. So, you know, my dad, I'm the youngest of three. And so when I was born a few years after, my dad was just kind of tired of missing those milestones with your kids. And so he decided to retire. He could have played longer, but he retired in 95 and after 15 years in the game, and he decided just to be home full time with us. And I'm so appreciative of that, because being a professional athlete, like, it's very demanding. Like you said, you're always on the road, and not being able to share those moments with your kids, like, it's really hard. And so it also takes a very independent woman to be married to an athlete. And I give a lot of props to my mom, 3 kids under the age of 5. It's a job, especially with baseball, with how many games you have, you're kind of on your own. It's just a complete different lifestyle. And that I feel like a lot of people don't really get to see that side.
Yeah. And now that you're in the business and you're having to move around the same way that he did, it must have prepared you in a different aspect. Like, you weren't coming completely shocked.
No, I wasn't. It's funny. Like, it just kind of seems normal, right? Always traveling, not being able to see your significant other. My husband plays. And so, you know, we're doing the long distance thing right now. And so that was part of the reason I feel like why we clicked, but I've just been so used to it. So it just feels normal.
Yeah, that's good. So I'm sure when your dad found out that you got the job with the White Sox, I'm sure that he shared some memories with you or gave you some advice. What are some things that he shared with you when you found out?
What makes, I think, sports so great is the camaraderie and the culture that each team brings. And Chicago is such an incredible sports town in itself. And so he was here during the Winnie Ugly time where, you know, this was a team that wasn't playing well. And then they just started finding ways to win, and just that gritty mentality. I feel like that describes him. Is he was a really good baseball player, but he had to work his butt off. He was the first guy there, the last guy to leave. And like, that was just always his mentality. So I feel like that team kind of represented him as a player, you know, with Ozzie Guillen and, you know, those other guys, like, they just were such a good team. And he said it was so much fun. Like, they were getting parades, like, they didn't even win the World Series, but that's how much the city was rallying around this team. Another thing too, with the White Sox, he describes it as like a family. And what I saw, you know, going to spring training and meeting all these people, the fact that they were there when my dad was there in the 80s, and the fact that they're still there just shows the loyalty and how well, you know, you're treating your employees, and they think of it as a family.
Yeah, I really cannot imagine that being your dad and then you're back on the same field as him. It would just be such a cool moment.
It's cool.
So earlier on in your career, did you ever get nervous, like, when you would come into these games?
I still get nervous. The nerves, though, are different, man, when in a football game, I feel like, because you have one shot, you have one game a week, 80 something thousand people screaming in a stadium. It's like an adrenaline rush.
So you worked for ESPN UNCC. That was your first job, right?
Yeah, ESPNU and SEC Network.
And you were working actually behind the scenes for 3.5 years.
Mm-hmm.
This must have been so helpful for you. I mean, a lot of people, they'll do on-camera work. And I know that you said you did a little bit, but I think it's so important to also get that knowledge behind the scenes. Do you think that it really prepared you even better for when you actually had to get out there fully?
I feel like it really does. I feel like everybody should at least spend some time in the truck to some capacity, whether you're just shadowing for a day and just to see how a show or how a game is ran and how it's put together, because it really does take a village. You know, people see when, you know, the broadcast comes on and that's all they see, but they don't see all the preparation that goes into it. And so I feel like I have a better appreciation and understanding of how shows and how a broadcast is put together because of that time. I also was able to sit next to the coordinating producer and the director and the producers and everybody in the control room. So I could hear what they were saying and what they like and what they don't like. A lot of times you don't hear it in your talent's ear. It was super beneficial. I just think it just puts things into perspective. I think when you're showing up as a reporter, as a studio host, and you're just going in and you're leaving, like, it's easy just to kind of get wrapped up in your own world. But when you kind of take a step back and you go into the control room, you look people in the eye, you shake hands and you say, you know what, thank you so much for what you do. It not only grounds you, but again, it changes your perspective and it really creates this team-like culture, which I've been super thankful to be a part of some really great crews where we've created that sort of community. And I feel like it honestly makes the broadcast better because you're not just doing things for yourself. You're doing it for your director, your producer, the people in the control room, the camera operators. Like, it really is a team-like effort. And I think you really get the best product as a whole when you think of it that way. I give a lot of credit to my dad, and I think he's kind of instilled this athlete mentality in me, you know, and where he's always said, you know, when you're going through a slump, like in baseball, when you take the focus off of yourself and you're going to your at bat and you're thinking about how can I help the guy behind me? How can I put my team in a better position than where we were before? That's when you're at your best. And so I've kind of tried to take that in every aspect of my life is like, how can I help the broadcast today?
I love that. So you impulsively said that your friend was out in New York. You moved to New York in your 20s, and it was a very humbling experience for you. How did New York let you learn things about yourself?
So I was at ESPN and ESPNU and SEC Network. And, you know, when I took my job, I have no problem starting behind the camera, but I want to work my way into in front of the camera. That's my goal. So over 3.5 years, I was trying to find ways to get in front of the camera. And it just came down to, hey, you got to go somewhere else in order to come back. And I completely understood that. I was in my early to mid 20s. My best friend at the time was at NYU in acting school. And she was like, you know what? Why don't you move to New York? When am I going to get this time back in my life? It's like, let's just do it. Now, I didn't have a game plan. I completely just drove up to New York. We lived in this like, it was like 400 square feet, me and my best friend. And I signed with like an agent. I didn't have a job. I learned a lot about myself. It was very humbling because I heard a lot of no's. I took acting classes. I did commercial stuff, freelancing stuff. And I realized how hard it was to really make it in this industry. I was moving to one of the biggest markets in the country. And of course, like, who did I think I was? I got a job as a hostess at a pizza restaurant, and I would go and I would just to pay my rent, and I would do that. And I would come back and I would edit my reel and I would send it out to as many people as I possibly could. But I think just living in a big city, it forces you to get out of your comfort zone, and it forces you to get to be humble. There's so many times where I would get on a subway and I would end up in Queens, or I would like miss an audition and I'm like, what the heck am I doing? But it taught me discipline. So when I got my job in Detroit, I was so thankful.
Yeah, I definitely believe that like everything happens for a reason, and every part of your storyline from where you end up, you have to go through these hard moments because when you said about the uneasy moments, I mean, this industry is really, really so competitive and it's so hard to get into. You have to go through those hard times because you realize how badly you really do want it. So it's just such a cool moment. I'm so happy for you.
Oh, thank you. I always tell people that are getting into this industry, be patient and just appreciate the grind because it's only going to make you better. So when you do reach, you know, your goal or wherever you want to go, you're going to appreciate it so much more.
Oh, definitely. And you always have to recognize how far you've already come. You've gone through adversity being in a huge city and, you know, pushing out your work and feeling the rejection, and now you're here. And I mean, it's a full circle moment.
Full circle moments. How many times have you in your own life thought about that? You know, something that you couldn't have imagined connecting the dots of how it would lead you to where you're supposed to be in that moment. For Brooke Fletcher, who really got her start in front of the camera at Bally Sports Detroit, now in her first season covering the Chicago White Sox for the Chicago Sports Network. Some of you listening may have been fortunate enough to play college athletics. For the rest of us, we reached the athletic prowess at the end of high school. But I remember growing up, for the most part, the strength and conditioning aspect of it, or weightlifting, or taking care of our bodies, getting bigger, stronger, faster, all that was really incumbent upon the individual himself or herself. And nowadays, if you're a college athlete, there's a little more accountability, a little more responsibility. Gabe Loper, junior at Wayne State University in the Sportscaster program. Gabe, good to have you on.
Glad to be back.
You had a chance to talk with the strength and conditioning coach, one of the coaches there at Wayne State University, Justin Kelly. And I've had a chance to know different strength and conditioning coaches at the professional level. And it's fascinating to me. It's a fascinating world. And especially, you know, if you're specific to one sport is one thing. But for somebody who's in the strength and conditioning program at the collegiate level, like Justin Kelly, you've got to be well-versed in a lot of sports and what works and what doesn't, right?
Oh, yeah. It's one of those things where the idea of being sports specific, because I mean, so many different sports require different, you know, levels of training, different requirements. But even then, one of the things I learned over the course of the interview is it goes so much further than just, are you in the gym so many days a week? You know, it's the nutrition side of it, the sleep side of it. And there's so many different aspects that go into performing at a high level, the behind the scenes. And it goes for D1 athletes, D2 athletes, and D3 athletes as well. So I thought this was one of those cool opportunities where you kind of get to see that behind the scenes aspect of athletes and, you know, kind of what they're doing. And, you know, especially for Mr. Kelly and, you know, seeing what he does and how he's helping to elevate these athletes and get them to the next level.
All right, here's Gabe Loper with Wayne State strength and conditioning coach Justin Kelly.
To start off, just talk a little bit about your role as a strength and conditioning coach and then how it fits into the bigger picture of developing student athletes here at Wayne State.
I work with 5 different teams directly. Fortunately for me, I have teams every season, so I get to stay busy and get to kind of be in on the action all the time.
Yeah, that's awesome. Now, you were a baseball player here at Wayne State as well. So kind of talk about your transition from being an athlete and then that turning into a strength coach and kind of what you learned there and how that ended up carrying you forward.
Yeah, so I definitely think being in our profession, whether that be a strength coach or even just a sport coach at this level, I think it definitely helps to have gone through what the athletes go through today at some point in our past. So we're always trying to look for strength coaches that have that student athlete background. And then also just like knowing the grind, knowing what it takes to go to class all morning and then have to come to lift, have to come to practice. I think having that background definitely helped. And what got me into strength conditioning is just seeing the results that it had for myself. I came in kind of a scrawny little high schooler and I definitely needed to gain some muscle, gain some weight. I definitely saw the positive impact that the weight room had on my personal career as well.
So I imagine your job changes a lot based on the many sports that you work with. So how has your approach to training evolved over the years, especially with new science and technology that you guys can use?
Yeah, so like you said, we're always trying to add technology to our weight room, add different apparatuses, whether that be like physical pieces of equipment or even just like technology. Like right now, we're actually working on trying to get all of our programming instead of, because we still do it kind of the old fashioned way where we print off a sheet. Everybody has a sheet of paper that you take to your rack, clip it on the rack and train off. We're actually working on something to try to get everybody's workouts on their phones. It's a more interactive student athlete experience. As far as the like equipment goes, as far as like technology, we're always trying to add stuff to measure bar speed, measure internal load. We've run heart rate monitors on our football players, seeing how many calories they burn throughout a workout, seeing what their max heart rate gets to, and kind of like how much stress they're putting on that heart with all the heart-related injuries in sports that have been coming up more often. We always think it's good to monitor that the best we can. And then as far as the programming aspect of it, you know, there's always that stuff to like measure bar speed, measure force into the ground. But at the end of the day, we also think basic programming works. Putting effort in and doing the basic lifts, obviously different sports have different demands, so we kind of program it that way. But for the majority of our programming, we're always trying to keep it as basic as possible. 75% basic movements, squat, jumping, pressing, pulling, and then maybe that 25% is a little more sports specific, a little more niche, like towards their sport.
That's great insight and everything else. And it's always cool to see the way that technology, even, you know, with obviously the adaptation of AI and everything else coming into play with sports. So more like the physical side, when you're working with athletes, what physical qualities do you think are absolutely essential for them to be able to compete at a high level in Division II, Division I college? And is height and weight like true, like the deal breakers, or is that just a myth?
We always kind of go back and forth on this when we look at, you know, Division I teams, even just like just recent memory watching March Madness, you know, all those men's basketball players are all pushing 7 feet. Even the guards are 6'6". You know, at Wayne State, our guards are like under 6 feet. So that's definitely a recruiting aspect of it. But in our position, we're kind of dealt the cards that we're given. But again, it kind of goes back to hard work. You know, I always kind of live by the quote, hard work beats talent if talent doesn't work hard. Usually the teams that we coach, if the best players are the hardest workers, those teams are usually going to be pretty successful. Yeah, the size, obviously, you know, that's usually what gets the NIL money and gets drafted in the first round. Sounds cliche, but nothing beats good old-fashioned hard work and getting in the weight room and getting gritty.
We go behind the scenes of life as a college strength and conditioning coach. Gabe, how important do you think it is to have a strong relationship between a coach, especially a strength coach, and the individual athlete, and not just having a program that says, hey, one size fits all?
It's crucial. I mean, the personal aspect is so important. It's so key because, I mean, every athlete is different. They're not one size fits all. I remember a little bit of that, you know, just being an athlete in high school, and, you know, the same things that work for somebody don't always work for everybody. So the personal aspect of that, because, you know, different people have to eat so many things or so many calories per day, and, you know, different people, you know, require different amounts of sleep in order to, you know, incur different amounts of muscle growth and whatever. And so that kind of personality, that connection that a strength coach can have with an athlete, the process becomes a lot more personable to the athlete, and it allows them to perform at such a higher level as opposed to a one-size-fits-all, because it's directed toward that single athlete in that single sport. And it allows athletes, especially today compared to, you know, whatever, or different levels, you know, lower levels, it allows them to perform that much better.
Yeah, that's well said. If I go back to my high school years, I just remember my coach saying, "Kane, get in the weight room."
I remember that as well. I didn't always do it, but I wish exactly. I did. But
exactly.
Man.
All right. Here's Gabe Loper with Wayne State strength and conditioning coach Justin Kelly.
And then for incoming freshmen, you mentioned even like yourself, you know, you're, you know, scrawny kid coming out of high school. What would you say is like a common mistake that freshmen make, whether it's about taking care of their bodies or physical training, that you guys see, and how do you guys mold them to become the athletes that they are here at Wayne State?
Well, I could go a bunch of different directions on this. I think the biggest thing with freshmen is the communication aspect of it, and trying to just like grow them into an adult and just try to just be on top of things like that. Obviously, the sport coaches are always on them, going to class, studying, and making sure, you know, you're there to get a degree. And for us too, you know, we're trying to treat them like adults, and we're trying to have them treat us the same. A lot of kids usually don't know how to cook right away either, so they are relying on the cafeteria or fast food or stuff like that. And then especially on our end, you know, gains, everyone thinks like, oh, what do I need to do to lift to gain weight? You need to eat to gain weight. That's what it comes down to. You're going to get the stimulus from training and from practice. So it's up to the athletes to put the right resources in their body. So I would say the communication aspect, and then I would say the nutrition as well.
Yeah. For athletes and non-athletes alike, what would you say is the biggest benefactor to staying fit and maintaining form outside of the weight room and training facilities?
I would say just try to like do stuff that you enjoy. Even like our former athletes that stay around, you know, whether that be fall sports that graduate in the winter and they kind of stay around for the spring semester. Obviously, they want to stay active and stay fit, even though they're not training like student athletes anymore. And the biggest thing I tell them is do stuff that you enjoy. Even if you're a non-student athlete, just do stuff that you enjoy. Don't make going to the gym a chore. Enjoy what you do when you go to the gym.
Yeah, for sure. Switching gears on over to like the mental side of things. I mean, that's such a huge aspect of, you know, being able to perform at a high level as a student athlete. Mm-hmm. How do you help your athletes build mental toughness?
I think personally for my programming, I like in our off season to essentially just get more volume and more hypertrophy for our student athletes. A lot of times in sport and even just in life, you know, your biggest competition is yourself. That's what's inside of you. You know, doing stuff that challenges yourself kind of pushes you to be uncomfortable. Obviously, not everybody's going to have 100% success rate in every single exercise that I program. So I think just pushing the boundaries a little bit definitely tests the mental fortitude.
So how do you know when to push an athlete versus when to pull back to prevent, I guess, that burnout or injury?
That's definitely one of the trickier parts of the job. When they're in the season, obviously the priority should be their sport. And I think if you ask a lot of sport coaches, the priority is their sport all the time. That sometimes makes it tricky to kind of push them for us. I think it's starting to trickle down into high school a little bit where kids are specifying in one sport, where usually our better athletes are multiple sport athletes. But even in college, it's a year-round job. You're training in the fall, you're doing fall ball, you're doing spring ball for football, and you're having winter conditioning. It's a four season, all year round cycle. We try to gauge where our athletes are. I think what gets lost is just having good heart to heart conversations with our athletes and trying to get them to open up to us a little bit to see, hey, how'd you sleep last night? Like, what'd you do this weekend? Stuff like that. I think there's different science parts to measure that, like resting heart rate, different central nervous system gauges. But I think the best way still is even just having real conversations with the athletes and trying to get to know them and trying to get to know them on a personal level, because it's tough, especially with the transfer portal nowadays. If you're a student athlete, you might not feel, you know, safe with your position on the team, knowing that your coach could cut you. Having an athlete be able to open up to us, like, you know, support staff, strength conditioning, whether it be athletic trainers, team nutritionists, I think that goes a long way.
Yeah, it's incredible. I just heard you mention, you know, sleep and stuff and the way that that can, you know, help benefit athletes. So what roles do things like nutrition and sleep and recovery play in athletic performance? And how do you help your athletes stay on top of that?
So we're the ones that need to provide that information for them and then just do our best to steer them in the right direction. Obviously, nutrition is one of the biggest differences between if you look at like a pro athlete. Most of those pro athletes have a personal chef, and that's really performance nutrition is becoming such a bigger thing now. It's like you see all the Power Five schools now have a full nutrition staff because that's kind of where it's going. It started with trainers, now then strength conditioning, and now it's going sports science and nutrition.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. And finally, I imagine it takes a team effort to support each athlete, of course. Mm-hmm. So how do you work with coaches, athletic trainers, and even mental health professionals to make sure athletes are developing in every area, not just physically?
I think, again, it goes back to communication, because if communication is broken at any point, usually that's when the student athlete suffers the most, or even the team suffers the most. But we also have to do it at the athlete's discretion. And that's when I think like getting to know your student athletes is big, because it could just be how somebody's different personality. That's how they act. You know, like that's not really what's going on. But I think the more you get to know your student athletes and the better communication you have amongst, you know, different support staff, I think that's what carries it, is because you kind of have the best feel for your student athletes on what they're feeling.
Coach Justin Kelly, we appreciate you. Thanks for hopping on here with us. This was absolutely incredible.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me on.
Love the interview. Great perspective from Justin Kelly at Wayne State University, and I think we could all benefit by having somebody like him around. Also want to thank Lyric Sloan and Brooke Fletcher. Fletcher, in her first season, covering the Chicago White Sox for the Chicago Sports Network. And to Matt Helbig, CEO and founder of Big River Race Management, and Cody Stedman, for their insight into bringing the I Ran the D 5K race back to downtown Detroit. That is our show for this week. Want to thank you guys for listening. You've been listening to Open Mic here on WJR.